This is Jan Kane reading with you today from the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 24th. We'll start our reading with an article entitled Assessing Needs, Volunteers Conduct Annual Survey to Determine Homeless Population. The byline is Garrett Karsten. Dominique Warnsley of Decatur spent Thursday morning at Blessingdale's thrift store asking customers if they had a place to stay that night. If any replies indicated the individual to be homeless, they were prompted to fill out a more detailed point-in-time survey, which went into more detail about their living arrangements. The purpose was to gain better understanding of the homeless population in Macon County. "There's too many people out on the streets. That's why I'm here," said Warnsley, an employability specialist at Homeward Bound. The 29-year-old works with people at the shelter to find jobs by helping them build resumes, job training, and doing mock interviews. "I feel like everybody should start with a clean slate. Everybody deserves a chance," he said. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development requests the point-in-time count be conducted during a single night in January each year to get an idea of the national homeless population. A housing inventory count is done on the same day to gather how many beds or units are available at local shelters. The data is submitted online via the Homelessness Data Exchange. Point in time is conducted locally by the Macon County Continuum of Care. Homeward Bound and Dove Inc. volunteers handed out surveys at 11 locations from 8 a.m. Thursday to 8 a.m. Friday, and volunteer teams plan to canvass the streets around Macon County overnight. One team covered areas like Moroa Forsyth, Macon, and Warrensburg, and another covered Decatur. Survey numbers will be released March 19th at the annual Continuum of Care breakfast. Compiled data will present the number of homeless individuals by certain demographics, along with reported numbers and bed capacity at local emergency shelters and transitional housing. Point-in-time coordinator Mary Garrison said the count has helped social services agencies track the needs in Macon County. Garrison highlighted a recent emergency shelter opened by God's Shelter of Love that filled a community need for more shelters for women and children. The information also helps determine if shelters are reaching capacity, and if so, how to accommodate them. The count is conducted in the winter, since people are more likely to be seeking refuge from the cold, Garrison said. "We really want to use it for good in our community, to understand our client population," Garrison said, "to get those people that are falling through the cracks." Macon County Continuum of Care data counted 130 homeless individuals in 2017, steadily rising at 161 in 2018 and 169 in 2019. Of those, 23 were identified as chronically homeless in 2017 or had experienced homelessness for at least a year while struggling with a disability, illness, or substance abuse. Chronic homeless numbers dropped to 16 in 2018, then increased to 25 in 2019. Homeward Bound Program Director Darsanya Switzer said a need to help those in shelters is something that's been addressed using point-in-time surveys. "While numbers of chronic homeless individuals have decreased tremendously, even hitting 71 in 2014, the organization still seeks housing opportunities for those who fall into that category." Homeward Bound, a lead agency for the Continuum of Care, provides housing and services for homeless in the Decatur and Macon County area. Housing units are purchased and leased through federal funding. According to Switzer, the point in time isn't a perfect way to calculate the local homeless population, but years of the survey's revision and development mean it has become more accurate and led to better results. "This is very important for the community. I don't think people understand that, and I wouldn't expect them to," Switzer said. "The numbers of individuals that we've been able to house over the years is because we do this here." Next, we have an article titled, "Woman Jailed on Forgery Charges." The byline is Tony Reed. A Decatur woman who wrote bad checks to obtain more than $2,500 in cash was arrested Wednesday, police said. The 38-year-old woman was booked on preliminary charges of forgery and deceptive practices. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police officer Benjamin Massey said the woman had persuaded a female friend to cash a $2,500 check for her after claiming she lost her ID. She said the check was written on a credit union account belonging to her husband, who is currently in jail in Cairo. The check was cashed at another credit union account the friend shared with her mother. The affidavit said a second attempt was made to cash a second $2,500 check 3 days later, but this time the credit union refused. The earlier $2,500 check that was cashed successfully was later returned as account closed. Massey said the friend's mother had been warned of the activity on her joint account by the credit union, but was told she was now out the $2,500 because the check had been cashed. Massey said the friend, meanwhile, had discovered she was now overdrawn on another of her bank accounts where she had earlier cashed 3 to 5 checks to help the woman out. These checks had also been written on a closed account. The woman was interviewed by Massey, who said she understood her husband's account had been closed but also reopened. Detective Massey told her this account was closed in 2016, and she said this was not correct, he said in the affidavit. She admitted to signing her husband's name to the checks, but claimed she had his permission. A check of Macon County jail records Thursday showed the woman remained in custody in lieu of making bail set at $25,400, which means she must post $2,540 to bond out. Another crime story is headlined, Man Faces New Attempted Murder Charge. Gardner also accused in 18 stabbing death. The byline is Tony Reed. Charles E. Gardner, the Decatur man accused of stabbing a victim to death in a dispute over a $150 video gambling jackpot, appeared in court Thursday facing a new attempted first-degree murder charge, alleging he had stabbed and tried to kill another man the day before the murder took place. Gardner, age 48, stood silently, his head bowed, as Macon County Circuit Court Judge Phoebe Bowers read out the attempted murder charge. She also read out a second charge of armed violence based on an aggravated battery committed on a public way, an offense related to the attempted murder charge. Information filed by prosecutors said the new charges date to August 8, 2018, and involved a victim who was stabbed in the abdomen and liver. The charge information sheets offer no other details about the circumstances, and Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said he could not comment outside of the basic information made public so far. Gardner refused to tell the judge his age and said nothing when asked if he wanted time to hire private counsel. Bauer said that, based on his refusal to speak, she would go ahead and appoint a public defender to represent him. If you want to talk to me and ask for time to hire private counsel, I will give you time to do so, she told Gardner, who was then led back to the Macon County Jail, where he is being held without bond. He did not enter a plea, and the judge scheduled a preliminary hearing on the new charges for February 5th. Gardner, who has also refused to talk at several previous court appearances, is listed in court records as pleading not guilty in the August 9, 2018 stabbing death of 24-year-old Cody Drew. Gardner is alleged to have murdered Drew on South Oakland Avenue after he refused to hand over a share of a $150 video poker jackpot won earlier that evening in a local bar. Prosecutors told an earlier preliminary hearing that Gardner had fled Decatur on a Greyhound bus after the murder, but had been intercepted and arrested by police in Louisiana after a warrant was issued for his arrest. He is due in court for a pretrial hearing on the murder charge February 4th. Prison records show Gardner has previously been sentenced to 30 years in prison for a conviction of attempted murder in Decatur in 1993. He had been paroled in August 2017, but was back in prison by November 2018, after being arrested on a charge of robbery with a firearm. One more crime story The headline is Man Arrested After Vehicle Theft. Suspect 18 in custody after fleeing. The byline is Kennedy Nolan. An 18-year-old man was arrested after police say he stole a vehicle on Decatur's west side, broke into a vehicle on the city's northwest side Tuesday, and fled from officers. Sergeant Chris Copeland said a 52-year-old man told officers his blue Ford Expedition was stolen late Monday night or Tuesday morning from an address in the 500 block of South Boyd Street. A burglary to a motor vehicle was also reported in the area. Around 11 p.m. Tuesday, Copeland said, a caller who lived in the 2800 block of Cardinal Drive told police he saw three subjects break into his vehicle. They were traveling in a dark blue SUV. Copeland said the victim described a vehicle that also matched the description of the Ford Expedition reported stolen Tuesday. Officers arrived at the area, spotted, and pursued the vehicle. Officers attempted to stop the SUV, but the driver disobeyed a stop sign and sped away. Copeland said the driver was eventually pulled over and arrested for aggravated fleeing, eluding, unlawful possession of a stolen motor vehicle, driving without a valid license, disregarding a stop sign, and speeding. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. The man appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on Thursday, where prosecution and defense attorneys argued over setting bail. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Ben Mullison asked for $50,000 and said the man had been involved in the theft of some 30 vehicles. Defending, Thomas Wheeler said that amount was excessive for a young man with no income or assets. Judge Phoebe Bowers ruled that bail would be set at a total of $50,000, meaning the man must post $5,000 to bond out. Macon County jail records showed the man remained in custody Thursday night. Here's a more upbeat story. Bleefnicks to play another round of Family Feud. Macon Resources, Inc. Executive Director Amy Bleefnick and her family had a successful turn on the national game show Family Feud. The show aired Wednesday, and the family was invited back to play another round, which will be televised Monday, January 27th, on WRSP Fox. If the presidential impeachment hearings are aired throughout the day, the show will be moved to 5 p.m. Otherwise, regular programming is at 3 p.m. Family Feud is a game show in which two families battle against each other, trying to guess the most popular responses to a survey question. During the match, filmed in May 2019, the Bleefnicks were able to win the battle round, competing against another family of five, but they lost the fast money bonus by 10 points. According to the family, they were not able to discuss Monday's upcoming episode because that would inform friends and family that they won. And we didn't tell anyone because we stunk so bad in the first two rounds, Bleefnick said. Next is an article titled, Elections Board Reduces Non-Citizen Voting Numbers. The byline is Peter Hancock. It's from Springfield. Only 15 people who self-identified as not being U.S. citizens cast ballots in the 2018 and 2019 elections, the Illinois State Board of Elections said in a correction Thursday, three of which actually turned out to be citizens. Spokesperson Matt Dietrich had initially reported that 16 possible non-citizens had voted. In a clarification Thursday, he said one of the voters had voted in two different elections and was inadvertently counted as two voters. Those people were able to vote due to a recently discovered programming error in Illinois' new automatic voter registration system that automatically signs people up to vote when they apply for or renew their driver's license. Officials in Secretary of State Jesse White's office, which manages driver's licenses, have accepted responsibility for the error and say the problem was immediately fixed. That system, the result of 2017 legislation that passed both chambers of the General Assembly by unanimous bipartisan votes, officially launched July 2, 2018. But the programming glitch that failed to filter out people who identified themselves as non-citizens was not discovered until December 2019. By that time, 540 5 people who identified as being non-citizens were registered to vote. The Elections Board has said consistently that some of those individuals may actually be citizens who accidentally checked the wrong box on their driver's license applications. We continue to work with local election authorities to establish the voting eligibility status of the remaining individuals who voted and of all 545 individuals who were mistakenly registered during the AVR process, Dietrich said in a statement Thursday. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are now calling for legislative hearings to determine how the mistake happened and what is being done to make sure it is not repeated. Representative Emmanuel Chris Welch, a Hillside Democrat who chairs the House Executive Committee, said he will hold hearings next week. Lawmakers will be back in Springfield on Tuesday, January 28th, for the start of the 2020 legislative session. Now we'll turn to the Herald and Review editorial board with their column Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. Thumbs up to new buses. Decatur has added 14 to its public transit fleet, replacing buses that outlasted their expected lifetimes of 15 years or 500,000 miles. The average replaced bus had lasted 17.4 years, and all but one went over 700,000 miles. Thumbs up to being back among the nation's elite and staying there. The University of Illinois basketball team returned to the Associated Press Top 25 men's basketball rankings earlier this month. It's the first time the Illini have been ranked since December 2014, and they've posted a pair of wins and risen in the top 25 since. There's reason to pay attention to what's going on in Champaign. Thumbs down to the money spent by Illinois politicians on lawyers' fees. At best, optics on the payments are horrendous. At worst, they expose the top layer of a rotting system. If our representatives in Springfield were taking care of their own houses legally, there would be more business of the people. Thumbs down to miserable weather and miserable forecasts. We've done well enough in dealing with our odd weather patterns, dealing with ice, snow, rain, and sunshine, often in 36 or 24-hour stretches, but the most recent forecast for spring, wet, is adding insult to injury, especially for farmers. Corn and soybean production dropped last year, the wettest January to June in state history. The news needs to be significantly better in order for farmers to keep their optimism up. Thumbs up to the National Archives for doing the right thing, albeit a little late. The National Archives altered the signs on a 2017 photograph from the Women's March on Washington, blurring or erasing text. The original excuse for blurring anti-Trump signs was that the National Archives is a nonpartisan, non-political federal agency. An immediate outcry led to the removal of the photograph and an apology. When we start altering photographs, we crawl deeper into the horrors George Orwell described in his dystopian novel, 1984. Also on the editorial page is an essay entitled New Rules, More Problems by Brett Sokolow. New federal regulations on how to handle sexual misconduct on campuses will soon be issued by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights. While some provisions are good, many will create greater confusion without improving the system. The Obama administration was focused on the rights of victims of sexual misconduct under Title IX, the federal law barring sex discrimination in education. By contrast, the Trump administration is reshaping Title IX around the rights of the accused. Among the positive changes are provisions that reconcile federal rules under two statutes, Title IX and the Violence Against Women Act, Section 304, that have been misaligned in ways that have confused colleges and complicated compliance. It is also good to see the OCR clarify investigation procedures and finally make clear that its rules for colleges are also almost entirely applicable to K-12 schools and districts. The bulk of the proposed rules would broaden due process protections for students accused of sexual misconduct in school and college environments, while weakening longstanding protections for victims/survivors. The administration aims to transform what have been historically informal school disciplinary processes into adversarial, quasi-criminal legal proceedings with live hearings, evidentiary rulings, and attorney-led cross-examination. But when was the last time making any system more complex and bureaucratic made it better? Due process proponents seem to think that the new rules put forward by Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos will save everyone's sons from horrible college and school administrators who think all men are potential rapists, or some such nonsense. Having worked with school resolution systems for 21 years, I don't think the new rules will broadly accomplish fairer outcomes, unfortunately. The resolution system schools have in place for sexual misconduct allegations could surely benefit from some changes and refinements, but the proposed changes won't solve the unfairness problem. That is because the OCR has confused procedural unfairness with substantive unfairness, and fixing the procedures alone will not result in more accurate substantive outcomes. While some additional due process protections for those accused of sexual misconduct are welcome, the proposed regulations would take it way too far. They would, for example, require schools to provide immediate, detailed notice of the allegations in writing before any school interview of the accused. In a standard criminal process, which this is not, the police can question a suspect about alleged criminal activity without notice. The OCR says this is a needed due process protection, except it isn't. There is no reason to require a more rigid process under Title IX than is required by law in criminal investigations. Currently, most colleges resolve sexual misconduct allegations through robust investigations. The proposed rules would also require live hearings before impartial decision makers to review the results of the investigation, interview witnesses, and review evidence. However, there is no data to show that live hearings are less prone to error than results produced by non-adversarial investigations. And the draft of the regulations released in November indicates that the final rule the department plans to issue would mandate cross-examination between the parties as well. The Education Department has not adequately examined the effect of these new rules on victims/survivors or the burden imposed on colleges and schools. Many may chill students' willingness to report sexual misconduct to school officials, which would completely undermine the purpose of Title IX. If the administration truly wanted to fix the problem of unfair resolutions of misconduct allegations, it would start by requiring more rigorous training and accountability measures for the college administrators who oversee these processes and set standards for how colleges choose decision makers in these cases. I support rational, clear, due process requirements for resolutions of all campus disciplinary matters, not just for sexual misconduct. But I fear that these new regulations will turn Title IX disciplinary proceedings into adversarial, quasi-criminal courtrooms without making anything fairer for anyone. Now we'll turn to letters to the editor. The first is titled, Judgment Coming for All of Us. It's sad the way people are turning away from Jesus and His Word. We can thank our government leaders, churches, feel-good Bibles, and feel-good pastors, and so on. They are taking a lot out of the Bible. People don't know or care. Just make me feel good and I'm okay. But we forget there is a judgment day coming for all of us. We are getting so close to the rapture, you can almost feel it. There are people that don't know who Jesus is or care. What a sad day. Jesus said the days of Noah will be the same as the coming of God. Look at all the evil things going on all over the world. Just look at what the Democrats are trying to do, changing laws to fit what they are trying to do. Impeach, they have been trying from the day and before Trump got in. Other goals are to take our guns away so we can't fight back. They took guns away from the Jews before World War II, and they took them away from the Indians. That didn't work very good for them. Are we going to let them do it to us? Wake up. Now they are getting people drugged up so they don't know what's happening. What a sad day for us. But Jesus told us in Matthew 24, things to look for and his coming. Read the Bible or the news, it sounds the same. Evil and more evil, killing, fighting, wars of all kinds, fire all over, something new almost every day. They want a world without Jesus. It is coming. If you don't make the rapture, you will see it. Turn to Jesus now and go home with Jesus in the rapture and miss the 7 years of hell on earth. This letter is signed Ronald Kress from Strasbourg. The next letter is, the title is Consider Ban on Drive-Through Liquor. Attention Howard Buffett. The last time I was in Decatur, more than 5 years ago, I counted 14 drive-through liquor windows there. This meant that Decatur had more drive-through liquor windows than all other cities in the entire state of Illinois, including Chicago, combined. According to Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, Macon County sends more people to prison on a per capita basis than any other county in Illinois, including Cook County. While I don't know if you're against drunkenness as much as you evidently are against marijuana use, I'm asking you from the bottom of my heart if you really, really want to change Decatur and Macon County forever, to please consider and figure out a way to ban drive-through liquor window sales there. This letter is signed by David Dacre of Bonnie Lake, Washington. We'll close this first reading of the Decatur Herald and Review with a look at the four-day forecast. Today, the high is 37. Tonight, the low is 30. It will be cloudy with rain and snow, low winds 4 to 8 miles an hour. Tonight, there will be showers of rain and snow, and winds will pick up to 8 to 16 miles an hour. Saturday, the high is 34, the low is 26, cloudy with a snow shower, winds of 10 to 20 miles an hour. Sunday will be mostly cloudy, winds of 6 to 12 miles an hour, a high of 35, a low of 26. And Monday there will be low clouds with low winds 4 to 8 miles an hour, a high of 36, a low of 28. We'll take a short break now, and I'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.